Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. And Rex, you are back home after stops in Augusta, stops in Hilton Head, stops in New Orleans. A hearty viewer on last week's podcast recommended that we begin to have a gut cam for the podcast. Is that something you might be interested in?
No. And this stems from, again, I think I said it best on Sunday night for Monday's podcast. I started to body shame myself, and that's never a good option. You're never going down a good road on that one. I think what made it hit, and as you may know, people on the internet, social media, they're very kind. They never say anything that they don't ever go after the one thing that you're most self-conscious about. And I was doing walk and talks last week, and someone took a screenshot and sent it to me and pointed out how bad of a look that was.
You
kind of have to have the belt on. You're walking. You're trying not to trip. You're trying to remember the questions. You're trying to. It was two players, and it wasn't a great look. So yeah, that's as close as I ever want to get to a gut cam.
Backpacks, belts.
Oh God, so bad.
Just all of which do not heighten our best features. I went to the dentist on Tuesday. Had the blood pressure machine come out. Now I've started panicking because my blood pressure was a little high. So I think I'm dying. So I went to the gym for the first time in forever, just trying to make sure that I do live to see my 39th birthday. That's besides the point. If you have any health and fitness advice, do leave it in the comments. Rex, want to get into the news of the week. It has been a slow news week, but Brant Snedeker and Jeff Ogilvy were named the U.S. and International President's Cup captains, respectively, earlier this week. You think those are inspired choices, Sneds and Jeff? Or you think it's mostly business as usual for these two sides?
I would say business as usual. I think they're both going to be good captains. I think Jeff Ogilvy was pretty obvious. I was on Golf Today yesterday with Shane Ryan from Golf Digest because you decided to take a day off and go have a vacation with your dentist. And Shane did bring up a good point that I hadn't really thought through. So there is a President's Cup after the next one that will be in Australia. And you would think that Jeff would probably be a likely choice with that. I'm not discounting the idea that Jeff could be a two-term captain. I think that's probably a very real possibility. There's also the option that Adam Scott is coming of age eventually. I mean, he's still competitive. He's still going to be on that team. You would imagine he's still going to be an important part of that team. But for Jeff, I think it makes sense twofold. One, he redesigned Medina, and I think everyone is excited to see what he and his firm did. That's where the President's Cup is going to be next year. And I mean, when you think about the President's Cup, at least in the semi-modern era, I don't know, outside of Adam Scott, if there's anyone you would connect more to it than Jeff. I think he's been involved with it as a player 7 times. I think he's been a vice captain, assistant captain 4 other occasions, if I'm not wrong. He's a huge part of that team. And there was a couple of things, and I want to get to Brant as well, but there was a couple of things that I thought that he said yesterday during his press conference and then when he was on Golf Today that did stand out. I thought it was interesting when he was talking about watching the Americans celebrate, just not last year at Royal Montreal, watching them celebrate essentially for the last 2 decades of this match. That's all the motivation he needs. He said, that looks like a lot of fun. I'd like to get around to actually doing that. And he did point out that from the international side, they do enjoy themselves. When they arrive on Monday, I think what Ernie Els and Nick Price began with the creation of their shield. They created sort of this one team philosophy. It's us against the world. Last year at Royal Montreal, they had one team room with the caddies and everyone together. I was standing in front of that team room on Friday night after they'd rebounded after a dismal opening round to go 5-0 on Friday. And it was a party. And I think the more and more that side gets a taste of how good it actually is to win, they will eventually become competitive. I'm not sure it's this time around, because as our friend Eamon Lynch pointed out, as only he can, they are not very good on paper, nor have they been very good on grass recently.
that's definitely an Eamon Lynch quote. I mean, as it relates to the captains, like, yeah, Ogilvy makes a ton of sense. 4-time assistant. You mentioned the renovation at Medina. We're going to see larger greens, reshaped bunkering, wider fairways, all of which you'd think would be helpful to the American team that is largely going to be more bombers and gougers than the international side. As it relates to Brant Snedeker, you know, he was a one-time assistant last year. He's on Keegan Bradley's backroom staff this time around for the Ryder Cup. If things go Keegan Bradley's way, let's say he wins a major championship and he's going to be among the top 6 automatic qualifiers for the Ryder Cup, you could see Sneds sort of taking on added responsibility, being a pseudo-captain for the Ryder Cup this time around. It is interesting as it relates to Sneds in particular, because you'd love to see how the Keegan Bradley appointment goes first, right? Like, is having one of the U.S. players' contemporaries. Is that like an inspired choice? Is that a home run? Or is it like an unmitigated disaster where there's no real leadership and there's just this vacuum at the top? I know you have to make these sort of moves with Brant Snedeker ahead of time because there's a lot to get done and a lot to formulate, and a lot the PGA Tour is going to put on your plate 18 or 19 months ahead of time. But I think you'd love to see how it goes first, because if that does become a really powerful model, if all of a sudden the Americans absolutely love having sort of one of their own in that U.S. team room leading the group, as opposed to someone like Snedeker, who obviously is still on the PGA Tour. He's still getting his 15 to 20 starts on the PGA Tour this year, but he's a little bit removed from his prime about a decade or so ago. So I would have loved to see if that model worked before the PGA Tour fell in line with what is sort of a traditional model of succession.
I see where you're coming from, and that's a good point. I'm not quite sure they could have waited until the end of this year, essentially after the Ryder Cup, to make that choice. Usually they want to give captains on both sides, President's Cup and Ryder Cup, a two-year cycle, because there is a lot that goes into it. You want to allow the captain to be comfortable. He was in line. I mean, I think there is a succession plan. I think they've created some sort of continuity both for both teams, U.S. teams I'm talking about, as far as I could have seen them going with Webb Simpson. I could have seen them going with Stewart Cink. Like, it's pretty clear who the players are who are in line at this point. I will say, to your earlier point, and I actually texted Davis Love in the middle of Brant's press conference, because I was really curious. Davis has been friends with Brant a long time, and asked him, what do you think his leadership style is going to be like? And he actually said he would probably lean closer to a Jim Furyk style, where he's not going to stand in front of the room and try to give a speech. He's not going to try to overcoach. He knows these are all really good players. He's probably going to try to be the player's captain. But Davis did tell me that the one thing that he was most impressed with when it comes to Sned's the last really 2 years is how hands-on he's been with Keegan in the Ryder Cup cycle, because he is one of those vice captains as well. And he was asked a couple times, Sned's was asked a couple times about if your scenario comes to pass, if Keegan does qualify for that team. He's been very clear about, if I don't qualify, I'm not making myself a pick. But if he does qualify, I can see him doing sort of a captain by committee thing. And I can see Sned's being a big part of that. Absolutely.
Yeah. And like, this is not to be a criticism of Brant Snedeker whatsoever. It's more the model has always been that these selections as captains, whether on the U.S. Ryder Cup side or the President's Cup side, are just sort of like lifetime achievement awards, right? Like, they're recognitions of their contributions that they've made to the American team over the past decade or two. That doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a great leader of men just because you've been a great player for the U.S. side over the past couple of decades. Again, we have no idea whether the Keegan Bradley thing is going to work. I tend to believe that it will, because I think Keegan Bradley is going to be a good leader of men. And I think there are others probably in that line. Like, Billy Horschel to me is cut of the same mold. He might not have tons of experience on a U.S. Ryder Cup team or a U.S. President's Cup team, but I think Billy Horschel would be a good leader of men and lead from the top and have everyone rally around him and galvanize around his presence. You know, that's not to say that Billy Horschel is one day going to, you know, dominate the captaincy and he's going to lead this American revival. Not to say that Brant Snedeker is going to do a terrible job as the U.S. President's Cup team either. I just thought potentially that the U.S. Ryder Cup team had signaled a new change for how they were going to approach it. And I was curious to see if the President's Cup, obviously run by a different organization, the PGA Tour, as opposed to the PGA of America, would fall in line with that line of thinking as well. I just thought that was a little bit interesting.
Well, I think you pointed out the most important part. These are two separate organizations. The PGA of America clearly has a different mindset right now versus the PGA Tour. And there's probably no need for the PGA Tour to really wait or to mix things up at this point. As I pointed out, they haven't been good on grass or
13-1-1.
Yes. So there's probably not much that they need to do there. That's why I think Ogilvy is the much more interesting pick in my mind. But that is fascinating to me, because you can apply this to any sport. Just because, like, Michael Jordan is probably the primary example that you would use here, maybe a Tom Brady, just because they're goats in their specific sports doesn't mean they're going to be necessarily good coaches, because doesn't necessarily mean they're going to be good leaders of men. I would argue that Michael Jordan would probably be an awful coach, which is why he never gave it a shot, because he's also a
terrible owner.
Yes, he probably had no interest. He doesn't seem to suffer fools well when people can't do what he was able to do, not understanding that, oh, you were a generational player and no one is able to do what I'm doing. For example, though, the opposite of that in golf is, I think we can all agree that Tiger's one turn as a captain in Australia at the President's Cup seemed to be very successful. He was a playing captain. So, and I don't know that anyone else in the modern era can actually pull that off and do it well. It is a different animal. You would have to see how Tiger's clearly going to get his turn as a Ryder Cup captain sooner rather than later. But that is fascinating to me because you're right. I don't know. Phil's probably a terrible example because it doesn't seem like now that he's ever going to get that slot. But I don't know if he would necessarily be a good leader for the reasons that I just said about Michael, where because I don't know that he can necessarily understand why people can't do the things that I do. Just do this. And you have to shake your head. And I don't have the ability to do that.
I think Phil would have been good. And I think the U.S. team is worse off for not having him in a U.S. team room. Obviously, that was much of his own making, potentially down the line. Maybe things can be amended there. Mentioned 13-1-1. Like, I'm sure we talked about this after Royal Montreal. Like, does the international team need to win one for this thing to matter? Does it even matter anymore? Like, where do you fall in the line of the President's Cup's relevance, Rex, in like the world of golf landscape?
Absolutely, they need to win one to be relevant. Of course, that.
But they haven't won one in decades, literally decades.
And I would argue it's why it's very much, I don't think this is overstepping lines. The President's Cup is by far the, I don't know how you would put it politely, but an afterthought when it comes to comparison to the Ryder Cup. When we're going to start talking about the Ryder Cup here over the next few weeks, and we're probably not going to stop for a year. That's just the way the Ryder Cup works out. We're always talking. And I did have a bit of a disagreement with Shane. Again, I appreciate you abandoning me and leaving me on that roundtable with him. His argument is that the Ryder Cup has turned into something that is not necessarily competitive relevant because what we've ended up with, and he's not wrong on
relevant.
This
Ryder Cup's not relevant?
Well, his argument was, and he's not necessarily wrong on this front, that it seems to me what we've ran into is the home team wins by a lot. And we ran into that the last couple of times. And I don't know that that's necessarily a bad thing. At least there you still have some sort of competitiveness that clearly we don't have in the President's Cup. Yes. 100%. And I even told the story that it was getting to the point for the international sides before Nick Price and Ernie Els did what he did, where I remember vividly having players, Louis Oosthuizen was one of the players I had a conversation with about that. They were kind of tired of going through this process. There was nothing for them to gain. Their careers, their legacies, they weren't going to be improved by showing up every 2 years and getting their brains beat in by the U.S. side. And it was getting to a tipping point. Again, I think Ernie and Nick did a good job of trying to turn that tide and understand that we are trying to build something here that's good. However, it seems to me they're still very much in the rebuilding process.
Look, I think the Ryder Cup, it's just a fact, has not been competitive since 2012. I mean, the last, what would that be, 5 or 6 editions have all been at least a 5-point margin of victory for the home team. I think you can make an argument, and I'm sure we will after Bethpage, depending on how that plays out, whether there should be some sort of, you know, intermediary who helps set up the golf course. You don't see as lopsided of an advantage for the home team. That's why Rory McIlroy has talked about the hardest thing to do in golf right now is to win an away Ryder Cup. I would argue that I would say 4 of the last 5 President's Cups have actually been pretty competitive. There have been at least pathways for victory on Sunday. There have been tense moments at least over the weekend where the result was somewhat in doubt. Brett Seneker on Golf Today on Tuesday talked about how over the radio that there was some nervousness among the U.S. leaders because the international team, obviously, they got swept on day one. They bounced back on day two, did exactly that. And then there was so many one-up matches. I think it was 7 or 8 over the course of the weekend that could have gone either way and potentially tilted the balance of favor. Tilted the balance of power in the international's favor. And it just didn't play out that way because most often the Americans are just the better team. And so the easiest tweak, Rex, to the President's Cup.
28 points.
28 points. That's talk it. About it every time.
And there's other things you can do. Yeah.
But that is by far the easiest. Yeah, they've gone from 32 to 30. Now go from 30 to 28. Put it in line with the Ryder Cup. That allows you to hide the weaker players. That allows you to have the strongest possible teams for all of the foursomes and four ball sessions. It should be an easy tweak if the PGA Tour is interested in making this a more competitive match every 2 years. I've yet to hear a good rationale for why that's not implemented. I've yet to hear it. And even players and coaches last fall after Royal Montreal didn't want to talk about it either.
No, and there is no good reason. That's why you get to hear a good rationale. And again, there's other reasons. There's other things they can do. I would argue that the international captain at this point in the proceedings deserves maximum flexibility. Whatever it is you want, you get. If that's a special team room, if that's a special gym, if that's 12 picks, if that's one pick, whatever it is the international captain asked for at this point, because you're not going to be relevant if this isn't close. And you and I went back and forth after Montreal about this. You seem to think that there was a 45-minute window to an hour window on Sunday where there
was There was.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I don't.
There was.
I also looked at that leaderboard and thought, wow, this isn't going to go well for the Americans.
There also was at Quail Hollow. It was like a 45 to 90-minute window where, if things continued in that line, it was going to, if not be very close, it was going to be an international victory. Again, it didn't turn out like that because the American strength and the willpower, and they just exerted their will at the end. But there is almost always a window. I think back to 2017, there was not a window. In fact, there was a window that it could have ended on Saturday, but that was an outlier. You know, Tiger Woods' team was trailing heading into Sunday in 2019. The one in South Korea in 2015 came down to the final green. You look at the last two at Quail Hollow, and again last year at Royal Montreal. Again, there was at least a 45 to 90 minute window where on Sunday, if things fell in line, it could have gone the international's way. It didn't, but I think four of the last five have been very competitive. It seems like they're on the right track at least. That's not good. That's not enough to make it relevant. That's not enough to be must-see TV. No. But it at least is somewhat encouraging that they appear to be getting closer.
You just described almost every NBA game. It seems like every NBA game features one team falling behind early, and then they make a run in the fourth quarter, and usually they end up coming up short. And that's pretty much what the President's Cup has turned into. I feel like what you're seeing on Sunday is, for you personally, is you're looking at this through the rose-colored glasses of, I want to write the best story I possibly can today. And that, in your mind, is an international come-from-behind victory. I certainly can appreciate that. I did want to touch, because it sounds to me like you want to move on, our friend Eamon Lynch, the conspiracy theorist, of course he threw out the idea of the LIV players. And look, both captains were asked this, and I'm really starting to feel real empathy for captains who are put in this position, because every single one of them has to dance around the same elephant in the room. What are you going to do with the LIV players when the time comes? And none of them have good answers, because the system that's been created around them doesn't create any sort of opportunity for a good answer. But there was a bit of a disagreement between myself and Jim.
Yes, Ryan. And that was an outrageous argument he tried to make.
And I had to sit and think about it, and I was disappointed I didn't get an opportunity to say my side. That show moves a little bit faster than our podcast does. However, I when I started thinking about what he was saying, the idea was, I said that if the LIV players were welcome back, wholeheartedly, all of them, forget about who you are, that it would help the international team more than it would help the American team. Because you look at Joaquin Niemann, I think I made this argument on Sunday night, he is one of the few players who I feel like joined LIV and has only gotten better. He seems like he's gotten more competitive. Now, certainly his major resume has some holes in it, and I addressed that as well, but I think he could be a huge addition to that team. Mark Leishman, Cam Smith, I can keep going down. Shane's argument was, well, the Americans would also pick up all of those players. They would pick up the Brooks and the Brysons and whoever else would come up. My argument is, at that point for the U.S. side, it's a zero-sum game. Okay, you pick up Bryson, you pick up Brooks, you're simply pushing out two players who were also going to play really well. For the international side, those
two players have never been good in team competitions, ever.
Well, and maybe they would be. Like, I'm not even making that argument.
Maybe they would be, but you can't. It's not like a Patrick. You could make a case for Patrick Reed, who has played well. I think he could be a contributor based on his match play record, based on his current form. I think Patrick Reed would be a good addition.
That's fair.
But a Bryson or a Brooks who hasn't done anything over the past year and a half, or a Dustin Johnson or whoever else you want to name, like, there's very scant evidence that would be beneficial to the American side. Whereas on the international side, you can go Joaquin Niemann, Cam Smith, Mark Leishman, Dean Burmester, Lucas Herbert, Sebastian Munoz. Like, all of these players have performed, at least, you know, they've either played President's Cups or they're playing well this year. And that would be a significant boost to a team that historically 1 through 12 has not been as strong as the Americans. The difference is not really at the top. Although last year, I think you could make the case that obviously with Scotty and Xander, they clearly had the two best players who are going to be inside the ropes. It's always a difference makers between 8 through 12. And if you're the international side and can shore up the back end of your lineup with players of that caliber, then yeah, I think it's a huge difference maker, as opposed to inserting a Bryson or a Brooks who have spotty match play records.
Yes, the U.S. team does not struggle with depth. The international team struggles with depth. And the addition, the return of the live players would only help that. I thought you and I were going to disagree with that. I thought that was going
to
be...
No. That was absolute lunacy from Shane Ryan. And I look forward to talking about him, talking with him about that.
He's a crazy bird.
He really is. Let's move on, Rex. We just mentioned Scotty Scheffler, who had a breakout year in 2024. He is back in action this week, still looking for his first victory of the year at the CJ Cup, Byron Nelson at TPC Craig Ranch. If you have not been paying attention, this has been one of the easiest venues on the entire PGA Tour schedule. The last 4 years since TPC Craig Ranch has hosted this event, 25, 26, 23, and 23 under par were the winning scores. You're having early week thunderstorms that have disrupted play during the Pro-Am on Wednesdays, what figures to be another bomber's paradise, even with the overseed, even with the design team coming in and tightening some fairways. Is this, Rex, the week that Scotty Scheffler gets it done, or are you looking at someone else?
No, I think Scotty's the obvious choice. And I was just, this is going to help me actually, because I'm going on Golf Central tonight to have this exact same conversation. So let's workshop some ideas here. Yes. I mean, it seems obvious that he's going to win eventually. There is nothing in his body of work so far this year that suggests he's not going to. You look at his last four starts, T8, fourth, T2. In Houston, T20 at the Players Championship, T25 is his worst finish this year. I've said this numerous times. If that's rock bottom, should we all be so lucky? I do find it fascinating when you start to look at the difference in stats. And if you transported both of us back to last year when he was in the middle of his run right now, it would have been probably really difficult for both of us to identify exactly what separates him from the rest of the class. I mean, you can quantify certain things strokes gain-wise. The fascinating thing to me now is comparing where he was at this point statistically to where he is right now, you suddenly can quantify it, and it's percentage points. It's so small when it comes to what he's doing really well now versus what he was doing even better last year. You can look at what he's doing with his driver off the tee, strokes gained driving. You can look at what he's doing with his iron play, with his putting, everything. It's not as though he's fallen off the planet. He's just 1 or 2% not as good as he was last year. And it gives you an idea of how narrow the margins are between being a good PGA Tour player and being Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah. Like there's marginal incremental differences year over year. If you're Scotty Scheffler, you do not want to have a track meet as a tournament that you're probably going to get back on track. Anyone can have a hot putting week. Those sort of conditions, soft, gettable, ball in hand if you're in the fairway, like those do not help separate the best players from the run-of-the-mill PGA Tour players. If you're at that level, you can shoot 25, 30 under par and not think anything of it. I think the biggest difference, Rex, is that Scotty Scheffler is not making as many birdies as he was a year ago. You talk about sort of the minute differences. Last year, he was tops on the PGA Tour in birdie average at 4.88 birdies per round. That was tops on the tour. This year, it's 4.28 birdies per round, which is 23rd on the PGA Tour. Again, those are minute differences, but when you're still leading the PGA Tour as he is in bogey avoidance, so he's not making mistakes, he's not making bogeys, he's not dropping shots, if you're not making as many birdies, it is going to be much tougher for you to win. 4.28, 4.88, that's a half stroke per round, multiplied out time four over the course of a tournament, that's about two strokes per tournament. That is the difference. If you look at his results between winning and losing, or maybe getting into even tighter contention, there's obviously a combination of factors when it comes to why he's not making as many birdies. He's not hitting as many fairways as he did last year. His irons are not quite as precise
as he was doing
as a year ago. And the mid-range putts from 15 to 20 feet are not dropping with the regularity that they were last year. Keep in mind, he switched his putting grip to that claw grip, which he was not doing last year, hoping to improve from inside 10 feet. That has certainly come to pass, at least over the eight starts that he has made in 2025. But the mid-range putt, again, if you're hitting your irons well, you've got 15 to 20 feet all day. That's the range that he's not doing so with regularity.
Not hitting as many birdies. Got it. What else you got on Scotty?
One other topic, Rex, I did want to get into before we get out of here on this midweek podcast is Colin Morikawa, who, if you missed the news on Tuesday, split with his caddy, JJ Jakovec, the only caddy that Colin Morikawa has ever had as a pro, won two majors, won six PGA Tour events overall. He is hiring Joe Grinder, who apparently is the most sought-after caddy in all the land. He was a longtime caddy, of course, for Max Homa. Left Max Homa, just got picked up in spot duty with Justin Thomas, with his caddy Rev on the mend with a back issue, won the RBC Heritage. Now he will join with the world number four. This is a big surprise to you?
It's not a big surprise. It's sort of how it works when a player is struggling, and that's what Cullen is doing.
Struggling?
Right. Well, yes, he's not getting the results he wants. For me, this goes back to the Scottie Scheffler conversation. Like, look at Colin Morikawa's resume. No, he's certainly not struggling. If you look at him compared to the rest of the PGA Tour, you would say, yes, he's having a really good season. You and I both have heard the aggravation in his voice, however, that he cannot get over the finish line, that he can't get back to the winner's circle. That seemed something that was very easy to him early in his career. And you would concede that that's aggravating him. And this is what the normal MO is. This is the playbook when a player is not getting the results they want, whether that's making cuts or whether it's winning. It doesn't matter. You're going to find a new caddy. You're going to find a new swing coach. You're going to find a new putting coach. You're going to look at everyone except look at yourself in the mirror.
Yeah, I think that's certainly fair. I mean, and it's obviously an individual pursuit, and only Kyle Morikawa knows what's going to be best for him. Only he's going to know what's happening inside the ropes over those 4 or 5 hours that they're competing. If I've learned anything, and I've learned a couple of things the hard way, that there's not like some NFL big board of like the best available coaches in terms of your swing or your putting, or there's not some best available caddies. Right. Like if you miss out on one, you don't just go down to the next and just get Mel Kiper's number two on the big board. Like every individual need is different. And so even on the outside, this does seem surprising that the world number four, who has won two major championships, who is coming off the best strokes gained season of his career, who already has two runner up finishes in 2025, is making a caddy, which might seem surprising on the outside. It's a good reminder that these are interpersonal relationships and only he knows what's going to work best for him. I think the overall message here, though, Rex, is that whatever's happening with Colin Morikawa, and he has not won since fall 2023, though he's been very, very competitive over the past year and a half, is that this shows that he's not content with just very good. No. By hiring Joe Greiner, he believes that he can access a new level that he was not currently at. And this is not the first time that Colin Morikawa has made changes to his staff and his team. Remember, just about a year and a half ago, he went away from Rick Sessinghaus, his longtime swing coach he had since the early teens, to move to Mark Blackburn, ended up now back with Rick Sessinghaus, is now hitting it better than he ever has before. It's just, I'm curious to see how it's going to play out. They are playing next week at the Truist Championship at Philly Cricket Club. That duo is going to debut. I don't think J.J. Jakubek is going to be on the sidelines very long as well.
This shows an incredible amount of growth on your front. To be clear, JJ is a phenomenal caddy. He was a phenomenal player in college, and that pairing did some really special things, multiple major wins, everything that Colin accomplished. And yes, none of this gets hung on him. However, it shows an incredible amount of growth for you, who is normally very, very quick to be critical of the caddy. And I'm glad you sidestepped that and made the decision to go with just interpersonal relationships.
Well, I think there's always a tendency, whether it's Butch Harmon as a swing coach or like Jim Bones McKay as the caddy, where if those guys are available, you just sort of plug and play and like, well, you have to go work with Butch, or you have to go link up with Bones. Whereas it might not work. You know, you speak different languages with player swing coach or player caddy. And so it's not just grabbing the best available. It also has to work. I think a lot of people were surprised that Justin Thomas and Jim Bones McKay did not have more success than they did together. That doesn't make Justin Thomas a worse player. Doesn't make Bones a worse caddy. Just like a player who goes to Butch Harmon looking for swing success doesn't necessarily translate that way as well. I've showed a tremendous amount of growth, Rex. I'm 38 now. I don't just fire off hot takes. It's not just an NFL big board.
I was nervous. I didn't know where you were going with this. I thought I was going to have to start apologizing for you all over again.
No, I don't think this is like an indictment of JJ. I don't think this is necessarily saying that Joe Greiner is going to be Colin Morikawa's salvation either. These are interesting dynamics that you have to have for a player and a caddy. But I think the big picture is that Colin Morikawa is not content with being the world number four, not winning in a year and a half, and not getting over the line. Just not enough. All right. Anything you got on the docket, Rex, before we wrap up this podcast?
No, as you pointed out, I've been gone for 3 weeks, so I am trying to cook some stuff. So I have a pork butt that I just bought from Costco yesterday. That's on the ringer. I'm probably going to start that tomorrow. I've got some ribs. So I got a lot I need to catch up on because it's been a minute.
It has been a minute. We have a 52-minute show that we are going to have to produce on Sunday and Monday. Do take videos. Potentially, we could put that on the podcast on Sunday. We'll also probably most likely have a beefy listener question segment where we'll hear from you. If you have any questions looking ahead to the PGA Championship, the signature event model, whatever happens at TPC Craig Ranch, Scottie Scheffler, Jordan Spieth. I did just see Will Zalatoris, WD'd. Get well soon, Willie Z. Anything that is on your mind, hit us up in the comment section on YouTube or find us on X, email, snail mail, whatever it is. We will try and get it in the show on Sunday night. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Golf Show Podcast with Breck Sand Lab. You guys on the drill, mcsports.com/golf for all latest news, notes, and updates. Thanks for listening. Thanks for the support, especially from you, Stephanie. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday night.
Nothing about the gut, please.